Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, because it's time for the podcast.
Hey.
Oh my God, it's Steve Stamp. It's Steve Stamp. Holy shit.
I haven't got headphones. I fucked it instantly. I'm gonna get some. One second.
All right. I'm so hungover, man.
I can tell. Yeah, you got that sort of croaky voice where you smoke loads of cigarettes.
Oh, mate, I've got the proper horse chest today from like sparking up constantly. Oh, it's rank. So disgusting.
I can't find his headphones. I
only find the massive ones.
Oh yes, mate.
I'm gonna look really hip hop now.
Can you use them to push your hair back as well?
Yeah. I was like, fuck, I'm doing like a hip hop podcast and I look the most indie I've ever looked
in my life. Don't worry about it. I'm wearing a suit at all.
How are you, mate? You good?
Yeah, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. I was just saying to Rupert, I'm really hungover because I went out last night like a fucking legend. Did I drink? Just a bit, mate. Just a bit, yeah.
Did I do all the drugs? No, I don't do drugs, but I could have. I got offered some. So. How many pints? How many pints are we talking, man?
No, I did this weird thing last night. That was such the wrong... It's not weird. I just decided for the first time, because I went out for the first time in a long time last night, and I thought I was going to avoid beer completely. And then I went straight into gin and tonic, because I thought it was like quite a summery drink to have. But they kept bringing it in like these big goblets. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks like a sort of a kind of centerpiece on the middle of a table type thing.
Yeah, yeah. Looks like a discussion thing where you go.
Yeah.
I was in Bulgaria and I saw this at a thing or whatever. Like constantly drinking out of those. It's just weird. It's like the most cumbersome fucking drink receptacle anyway.
Yeah, like a sort of goblet type vibe.
Exactly, goblet thing. Yeah. So. Yeah. You know what? As I was drinking it, I thought, I might have got myself some material. Got some material on this. I'm doing a gig tomorrow, so they might get 10 minutes of gin and tonic glass stuff.
Well, you could walk on stage with a goblet.
Oh, that's a great show. Just put it down and go, God, what is the deal with this glass? Mad. I asked them for a glass backstage, and they got me this. It's a bit fucking weird.
Doing much, isn't it? It's like the kind of thing you get in Bulgaria. Also, I'm sure I heard them talk about this on a podcast recently.
So, Steve Stamp, we're in, aren't we?
We're recording. We have actually started. Yeah, it's like a nice casual ease in.
Steve's being.
Yeah, we just do. Do you know what we do, Steve? We say that we're going to do a nice casual ease in, and Rupert always likes it to be like that. And then I formally announce the start of the podcast and completely undermine it. That's what happens.
Oh, by the way, we are recording and all of this is being used.
All that stuff you said about drugs and everything.
So how are you, Steve? You good?
Yeah, it's good. You know what? On that note, though, it's quite mad seeing like everyone back in the raves today. It's like, social media this morning, all the DJs are back in the raves, and it's quite nice to see. After a year of seeing them quite depressed, sort of not knowing really what to post.
Mm. I know.
It's great.
Yeah, because everybody's been doing like, basically, all the DJs have been setting up cameras in their bedrooms, haven't they, and trying to sort out little Insta Live things. But like what Rupert and I were saying, like all the comedians, because it's been so long since they've heard a really full room rocking, it's just all of their Instagram is just full of stories of them just like absolutely buzzing their tits off. They've just forgotten what a full crowd sounds like. It's like, comedy's amazing! Live comedy's back, guys! And it's better than ever!
The crowd must be going crazy as well because they haven't had a good laugh for like a long time.
Just laughing at anything.
I did a gig the other night, like a pub gig thing, and it's like it must have been their first gig back or something or whatever. I said something like something so fucking innocuous, like what's going on with this post here, like something about
the stage. Your gin and tonic material.
Yeah. I just said this is a bit much, isn't it? This
bit of a weird glass.
They practically gave me a fucking standing ovation. It was mad. Like I hope they stay like that. Do you know what I mean?
Imagine doing material and it gets nothing at this stage.
You just have to kill yourself immediately.
Yeah, that's when you're done.
Anyway, Steve, we've got to talk about this. How's it feel to be a movie star, mate?
It still doesn't feel like it's happening yet, but yeah, it will do, hopefully.
How long has it been? Because I think we went out for this sounds so bad. We went out for a drink, didn't we, about 2 years ago?
Yeah. I never called you back.
No, I never called you back. I just didn't feel like it went well. but had you done it then, or had you like? No, you'd written it then. I think
we had written it and we hadn't shot it yet.
But it got delayed, didn't it? Like you've had it done for a bit, right?
Yeah, we finished it like just as the sort of whole epidemic thing set in, and we were in the edit when it happened, so it was kind of sort of good timing in a weird way. But then we just had to sit on it because they wanted to do a cinema release, so we were kind of obviously happy to wait for that. But cinemas have just kind of been a bit of a struggle for cinemas recently. So yeah, we've had to wait, but now it is all ready to go. And apparently there's going to be loads of posters and all that sort of shit appearing. It's weird with like movie kind of, well, this is what they told us anyway. They don't really advertise it up until just before. Like they'll do a few bits of trailers and stuff like that, but the sort of poster campaigns and stuff, they don't do it until kind of right near the time, and then they bang it.
Because no one pre-orders cinema tickets, probably.
Yeah, I guess that's so, yeah. And they probably just can't be asked to just have loads of them all the time.
Yeah, Rupert, that was a very insightful observation.
There'll be more, don't worry.
Bloody hell. mate, the pub I was at last night.
The old gin story again.
No, this is really, no, but this is, I've never heard somebody do this, but the DJ played a Corruption.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he goes, look out for the movie.
What?
Wow.
Nothing Big in Japan, coming out soon, like that.
We probably paid for that in some way.
The word of mouth campaign. I had a dream to rock the mic scene. I was doing that since I was 13. MC Grinder and a DJ Beast, make you get the put of it in your dancing fame. I had a dream to rock the whole nation. Worldwide like Resident Federation. Beast came through, said turn up the bass. Then Jay came through with a big suit blazing. Step to the side when the man them arrived. Better stand up still with your hands to the side. Garage MC, I'm a champion of grime. When I step in my shoes, got a hand on the night. I get reloads when I get my hands on the mic. Miss with the left, get banged with the right. Dreaming, I can't stop dreaming. Stay away, you don't want to see me on side.
I don't think I've ever heard a movie plugged at the Punch Bowl in Crawley ever before.
We're quite we're quite niche, I suppose, in terms of our music crossover stuff. It is a bit of a weird one. It's hard to place Corrupt Femme because we're, I guess, just trying to cash in anywhere we can. No, but that is mad though. It's good that
I was really surprised. And then I went up to the DJ. I was like, "Hey man, hey, I actually know these guys." Cool.
I'm doing a podcast with one of them tomorrow.
Yeah. Is that why you rang me at 1 a.m? Did the FaceTime?
Hey, Steve, tell him about that. We had a laugh about it. No, God,
I told you, and then you hung up.
We saved the best for last, didn't we, Rom? We've had all your other stable mates on the show, but we saved the best for last.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, I don't know how to take that, but I'll take it either way.
It felt like it felt like the sort of thing that you'd say, and knowing Steve, he's only going to take that negatively. It was probably a bad thing to
say.
It's a pep talk. We haven't quite started yet. It's a bit of a pep talk.
Oh, we not started? Okay, good.
Have we started? We have started.
Yeah, we have started. Yeah,
otherwise, this is a massive fucking waste of all our time. So how have you been anyway during lockdown? Is it just been working on a film and stuff? Or like getting ready for it to come out?
Yeah, a little bit of that. I was sort of in the edit and doing the sort of all the post stuff and then just writing things really. So it's been all right in terms of like getting on top of all the writing stuff. I was sort of, that wasn't getting done because I was too busy fucking around, going out and doing things. So yeah, it's been all right. It's been productive.
You're about to start shooting the curse, aren't you? With with friend of the podcast and only know Snoop of all of the hip hop artists, Tom Davis.
We have to be very careful, don't we, talking about Tom?
Yeah, he doesn't like that he did the podcast years ago, but he's still our go-to example of the person who came on the podcast knowing the least about hip hop.
I think it was shortly after that we changed our booking policy. That's a fair thing to say.
So we've been doing loads of Zoom writing meetings, which is quite weird, but sort of good in a way. It means that like everyone can sort of, you know how like when you're in a room, everyone just shouts over each other, but on Zoom it chooses who to listen to, and it's sort
yeah.
of, so actually like you can sort of get your voice heard without having to shout over Tom and Sipa, which is two of the loudest men I've ever had the pleasure of being in a room with.
So people who don't know, you should tell them about what the curse is.
Yeah, so yeah, the curse is a new Channel 4 thing that we're doing. It's about a 80s gold robbery. It's based on a true story, the Brinks Mat robbery. But we're doing a sort of comedy retelling of it, which is kind of completely changing what happened, really. But a lot of what did happen was amazingly funny. It was kind of by accident that they managed to kind of steal the biggest shipment of gold that's ever sort of happened, basically. And pretty much like from there, it was just these kind of low-level gangsters struggling to deal with all this gold that they had, and not knowing how to sort of not knowing like how to make deals and what they're supposed to be doing, basically, which is amazing. Like there's a true story about them going to Colombia and having like a meeting with what's his name, the fucking
Escobar.
So they go to Colombia to meet Escobar, do a deal with in exchange for coke. So they give them a load of gold to get coke. And they're like,
is this true?
And then they realize that they have no way of like getting back. They haven't sort of thought about what.
Yeah, they've got a load of coke in Colombia.
Yeah, so they're like, well, how are we going to get this? That's the kind of levels that we're dealing with. So yeah, it sort of writes itself. But we've been having a lot of fun sort of developing these characters, and obviously the 80s element of it's amazing as well. Like for the music and stuff like that, it's. All the scripts have got like loads of musical kind of choices already in there and stuff. So it's really good. We've got like 400 song playlists already, like just getting excited
really?
About it.
Or,
any hip hop? 80s hip hop?
And not at the moment, actually, because Tom's involved. So he's refused to let there be any. For this podcast, it's going really bad.
No, it would have been, if this was a radio show, it would have been a good segue.
Yeah.
And like, have you got any like. Speaking of playlist choices, are you excited about? It's very. You never know how excited people are or not about this new Kanye dropping that he was supposed to.
Yeah, you know what?
I'm
a big fan of Kanye. I think he's like, he's obviously, you know, a fascinating psychological study as well as everything else. But he's as an artist, I think he's amazing. I kind of love most of what he's done, even the sort of. Like the last, like the gospel album he put out, I loved it. I thought it was amazing.
That tune with Pusha T, and weirdly Kenny G at the end.
It's
such a banger. The best is yet to come. I'm just glad that you waited. They all say they're real till it's time to appraise it. I seen them come and go. You only the latest, but who am I to judge? I'm crooked as Vegas. Use this gospel for protection. It's a hard road to heaven. We call on your blessings. In the Father, we put our faith. Like after they finished rapping, I didn't think I need some sort of loose saxophone on this, but
I think what he does amazingly well is he knows like who the tastemakers are that he should get involved and who he should like allow to be kind of part of the process of making his album. So he kind of, you know, like people like Benji B and like those kind of DJs that are so in touch with the music scene. So he'll bring them into the fold so that he is like on the pulse of, not just on the pulse, but sort of going, you know, off in his own direction but with that sort of knowledge of what's going on at the moment. And like, if he wants, I don't know, like to get some gospel sounds, then, you know, like Budgie did that whole gospel album. I think it was an Alchemist. And so he got him involved to like get some fucking amazing samples in there. Like that sort of, when you're like at the level he's at, you can just pull together all the fucking biggest guys in the music scene and just like...
But it doesn't ever feel like, you know, you hear artists sometimes and they'll just pull, I mean, it happens more in pop music, like legends, where they just bring in whoever
to sell
to try,
records.
You know, to try and jump on that, to jump on that sound. Whereas he always feels like he takes whatever they do and he still, it still sounds like Kanye. Do you know what I mean? It's like, whereas it's not like he's suddenly gone, oh, this is my, I'm going to do this Skippy thing or whatever I'm going to try and do. I'm going to sound exactly like this artist now. I'm going to bring them on to give it a bit of credibility or whatever. He does turn it into something that is undeniably him, doesn't he?
Yeah. Every time. The thing of his like massively inflated ego means that he will always like not be happy with anybody else's shit. Like somebody can show him the perfect beat and he will go, nah, I'll show you how we should do this.
Yeah.
And like flip it into something else. Yeah. And that will be sick. So fair play to him. It works.
I can imagine he's got I imagine he has got quite a Brent-y quality to him in his in the studio.
Like sitting with the chair backwards, like biting his lip.
Yeah, no, it was good. Yeah. It was good. Was it amazing? No. Can I make it amazing? Watch this.
Yeah.
But like the thing with the other thing is, have you been watching all these videos of his album listening thing?
Yeah, it's crazy. He's still staying in the stadium where he did the listening party.
Really?
Yeah, because he's like, he's just decided he wants to finish it there. So he bought like 10 beds. And that's why he appeared at some like football game there yesterday and he just rocked up because he's living there.
Oh, I saw somebody at a football game.
That was him.
Wearing the sort of gimp.
Yeah, the like, red shit. Yeah, I think it's him. Yeah, they're saying he's.
And I thought it was like I thought it was just somebody for banter pretending to be Kanye West in the crowd.
It was him in the same gear.
Yeah, loads of people are in his house going, what are you doing here?
It turns out it was Kanye West in the same thing.
Crazy.
That's unbelievable, man.
Anyway, sorry, you're here because you're into hip hop, obviously, and also because we like you. I mean, but to be absolutely honest, if you weren't into hip hop at all, that probably would be a deal breaker for this. Since Tom Davis,
Tom told me I had to pretend to like hip hop.
You're doing a good job, man.
Honestly, really good.
I've printed out a few bits.
You're going to show us some pictures of famous rappers. Yeah.
I've like photoshopped me into a photo with someone, Black Thought.
Good.
Man,
good.
He knows the stuff.
Yeah, Black Thought. Yeah, he knows exactly
not an obvious one.
Yeah. This guy knows his stuff. So, what's your first hip hop album? How'd you get into it?
Well, you sent me some questions asking like what.
And I've just combined two of them, which
he's a good. I told you he's a good interviewer.
Yeah, I wrote like a sort of shit, like jokey response to this one, which is basically that my first hip hop album was PJ and Duncan, Psych.
Incredible.
Which is true, because that was in a way rap, I guess.
It is, no, that is rap. Yeah, you know, that is a rap album.
Yeah.
How old were you then when that album came out?
I actually don't know. I'd have to look up the year. But I remember I was at a leisure centre having my birthday party was at this like sports centre. You know, when you get all your mates and you just have a big kickabout basically in a sports centre. Yeah. It was one of those parties, and I remember getting the CD. My uncle bought it for me, and we played it, and it was like the best thing. But because I was always into like, even when I was young, I always thought rap was like cool. Like the other one was E17 when that sort of came about, and I was in primary school. I remember going to like aftercare, like at my school, and we would perform E17. Steam like on chairs and shit, like proper. And I knew all the raps. Like I wanted to be Tony Mortimer basically at that time. So that was my early, very, very early.
Do you remember any of the lyrics? I'm not asking you to rap, but do you remember the lines from it?
Steam like a cream, dream never stop rising. I'll rub you like a wave going out while the tide's in. It's poetry. Dream never stop rising. I'll rub you like a wave going out while the tide's in. Fresh and bubbly, just hard and nice and easy. Smooth with the move to soul dry or greasy. Here is your harmony, here is your friend. Kindred spirit of ethereal blend. You on a crack, on a journey, sure. I'll take your body on a mystery tour. It's poetry. And now,
it is, though.
And as you, the older you get, the more you realize that he just was basically using like a thesaurus rather than actually like knowing what he was talking about. But
at the time you thought it was properly deep.
Yeah.
You were like, this is the smartest shit ever.
Yeah, I thought it was incredible. But I also remember getting one of my like actual real sort of first hip-hop albums was 36 Chambers. I remember getting that.
That's a good swift move from PJ and Duncan to Wu-Tang.
I went in deep, yeah. I went straight in with 36 Chambers. I be tossing and forcing, my style is awesome. I'm causing more family food than Richard Dawson. And the survey said, you're dead. Baby flying guillotine chops, swap your fucking head. Mr. Who is that? Hey yo, the Who is back. Making niggas go bobo. Like on Super Chat, me fear no one. Oh no, here come the Wu-Tang Shogun. Kill her to her eardrum. Put the needle to the groove. It's rude and I'm forced to fuck it up. My style carries like a pickup truck. Cross the clear blue yonder. See, the China Sea, I slam tracks like quarterback sacks from LT. Now I that and then like around that, or maybe a bit later on, was like my Eminem phase as well. So there was like I sort of went in deep and then became a sort of cliche of like a white guy listening to hip hop. And dyeing my hair yellow.
Did you?
Right.
Wow. Yeah, it genuinely happened. It was a journey, basically. Yeah.
But a respectable journey, because I know that like the RZA often refers to PJ and Duncan as the 37th chamber, doesn't he? Like in interviews and stuff like that.
That's 37 and 38, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Everyone has to start somewhere.
Do you ever put 36 chambers on now? Because like, the thing about because obviously it's like such a classic. But it is one of those albums where you kind of had to have got into it when it came out. Like, if you play that record to people now.
I guess it's quite like, yeah, it's kind of, you have to pick your moments for it, I guess. But the production on that, I'm someone who's very obsessed with production more than really, and more than the rappers a lot of the time. But the production on that still, like, stands up now. Like, it still feels like a... You could drop one of those instrumentals now and it would complete work. It's unbelievable. I guess the lyrics are probably what makes it a little bit more jarring and sort of a bit like if you put it on in the family barbecue, it might turn some heads kind of thing.
Yeah.
Your mum might come up to you and ask, what is this? Can you change it, please?
Yeah.
But I still listen to Wu-Tang. Like if I'm driving, I feel like it's good driving music.
Yeah. Did you listen to all of their did you keep following them like with all the solo projects and stuff like that?
Kind of, not like very deeply, but I feel like there were some albums where I would just like sort of one or two of the tracks.
Yeah.
And I'd just sort of like have them, but I wouldn't ever sort of revisit those albums. I love like Raekwon, the Cuban Lynx album. Ghostface is I love what Ghostface has done in terms of like collaborating with like other artists and stuff like that. He kind of pops up on like he's got a thing with like Bad Bad Not Good and stuff, and I'm like that sort of stuff I really like. Yeah, man. The Wu-Tang journey though is so wild. Like the whole thing of them, their sort of politics and shit is quite
fun. I know.
Did you see that documentary?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And I remember for the first time I sort of became aware of like the politics, there's this like this hip hop documentary from years and years ago, The Show, right?
Yeah.
And it was loads of different people.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and they were like, I think it was in Japan, actually.
It was Japan, yeah. That was one of the inspirations in the film, is that is that basically there's a bit where Method Man's, like, he's sort of saying that he's ill because he hasn't got any weed. They're all being really dramatic. They've got, like, towels over their heads, like, lying back, like, I can't get any weed. So we sort of, that was one of the inspirations for him.
But I remember, like, I remember them, Jim and him, I think him and you, God, were having, like, an argument on the train.
Proper heated.
Yeah, it was really heated. And I remember thinking, like, in the same way that I imagine an 8-year-old would get upset about two members of One Direction arguing or something like that. Yeah. I remember being really upset by it, like, thinking, I thought these guys were like, I thought they were like a clan. I thought they
were
like,
worried they were going to split up, sort of thing.
Yeah, I wasn't. Yeah. I think I was. I was like, oh God, I don't want to see this. Yeah.
It was like you got them saying that Method Man doesn't let them get a word in, basically, and that he's all the one that does all the talking and that they should sort of. Yeah, it got proper weird.
Well, it's because I think it's because, like, when you read about all of the, like, the inception of Wu-Tang or whatever, they all, like, the RZA, I don't know how many does, but they the RZA just saw Method Man as the one that was going to be the megastar, just because his voice, his kind of charisma and all of that. And so, you know, he must have just been pushing in front and centre.
Method Man was definitely seen as the sort of front man to some extent. And RZA, I guess, is the sort of, like, instrumental player, instrumental.
Yeah.
But I remember being obsessed with Method Man for a while. Like, Method Man was, he was like my favorite, you know, like, there was that era where he was just putting out all the sort of pop, like, bangers, but they were all sick. I remember thinking he was definitely my favorite. And then as I got older, I was like, maybe Raekwon's my favorite.
Yeah.
Maybe Ghostface is my favorite now.
Yeah, Ghostface had been my favorite for such a long time. Mm. But also, partly, it's like, you go to somebody, here's your favourite member of Wu-Tang, they go, Method Man, you go, okay, man, I thought I was talking to a head.
God.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you don't even wear your cap backwards. You're not hip-hop at all.
Yeah, yeah, all right. Yeah, cool, all right, yeah. Yeah, I'll leave you to listen to Gravel Pit. I'm going to actually listen to some. I'm actually going to listen to some proper Wu-Tang, all right. Cool. Yeah. Yeah,
that was a blip, wasn't it? That was that Flintstone-style video, do you remember?
Mate, that was fucking so mad.
Yeah, it was wild.
Like, were they that trying was, to push?
Wasn't that on the Flintstones soundtrack?
I think it was,
What?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't, was it?
Yeah.
Seems mad to go that into it, doesn't it?
Hold on. I didn't know this.
Yeah, they were.
Is that true?
I think they were actually on the soundtrack for the Flintstones. I'm not sure if they. It must have been that they made.
Google it.
Me, right? If it's Gravel Pit. Or did they just think there's not that many that lend themselves to the Flintstones themes?
Work back.
Gravel Pit sort of worked.
Yeah.
Let's get Wu-Tang in.
I don't know what I think is madder, the fact they made that tune called Gravel Pit without it being affiliated with the Flintstones, or that it was. Do you know what I mean? That's so
I guess if you've made a tune for the Flintstones soundtrack and you've got access to, like, the fucking studio and shit, it would be very tempting to go down there and have a day out, like, fucking around being the Flintstones. Yeah. But yeah, if you're Wu-Tang, maybe have a think about that.
I know. And then doesn't the chorus go, check out my gravel pit, and then it's a mystery unraveling. What are you talking about? What the fuck are you on about? Unless you're telling me the plot of the Flintstones movie is that there's a murder that takes place at the gravel pit. In which case,
no, but then it goes. Sort of. Then it goes. Wu-Tang isn't it? Wu-Tang is the CD that I travel with.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
So it's just like a plug. So they're not even trying to disguise the fact that they're just doing this to plug their other stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't, I've just checked, it wasn't on the soundtrack.
So what?
It was separate.
Wow.
So okay, the concept came about because they referenced 2 million BC, which bears a strong resemblance to the representation of the Stone Age in the Flintstones, so that's why they did the video.
That's just like completely blown my mind. Nothing makes any sense. No.
End of podcast.
Wow.
Oh my God.
But what about that thing of them, like, making that fucking weird CD that there's only, or what is it?
Oh, there's only vinyl? One copy of.
Is it a CD or is it a vinyl? It can't be a CD, can it?
It's a vinyl. Isn't it? Yeah, that geezer. That isn't he the guy that, like, pushed up the price on Farmer or whatever?
What, yeah,
like,
he's in jail now, isn't he?
Is he?
Without his album.
That was quite a Kanye move, actually. Mm.
But it also is the absolute opposite of Wu-Tang is for the children or whatever, isn't it? I mean, it's in such... We're going to make one copy and we're going to give it to whoever is rich enough to purchase. It's so mad, isn't it?
I think what it was supposed to be was more of a sort of legendary, like, the mythology of the Wu-Tang and the having, like, the sort of, you know, like, in those I don't know, there's that kung fu movies where it's like there's a sort of special scroll or a fucking sword or some shit that they're all
a goblet.
Yeah, or a goblet, a gin and tonic filled goblet. And I feel like that was their way of justifying it, but actually it was definitely a weird money thing.
Yeah.
At the same time.
So the guy Martin Shkreli,
yeah,
paid $2 million for it. And now it's been seized, because he's in prison, it's been seized by the federal court. I mean, I guess it's with the authorities or whatever.
That's fucking weird, isn't it?
Ooh, bizarre.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So, 36 Chambers is your favourite. What sort of artists are you listening to? Like, what type of hip hop do you listen to now? Or what do you, where do you kind of gravitate?
I guess, like, I'm trying to think of examples. Like, Action Bronson is up there for me. Like, the sort of the ones that have a kind of a bit of like charisma, and but also I like his productions are quite kind of like the Alchemist kind of stuff. I guess it's quite influenced by Wu-Tang and samples and that sort of stuff. Yo, it's Mr. 4040. Dressed like I'm Tresh from Naughty. A young brother that'll stretch your shorty. David Caruso couldn't connect the story. Solve the puzzle. His favorite murder weapon was a shovel. It's the jefe. Spanish women all over my body like I'm a machete, Holmes. All I do is write these essay poems. Let's get dusted at the Mets game, Holmes. Like 16 handles, catch me swirling in the left lane, home. I don't even got my left leg on, trying to dance tonight. This ancient language that I sing, wrapped up my hands and ice. Me and my brother go together just like lamb and rice. Things that are a bit interesting, like Tyler's new album, I really like.
Oh my God, that is such a great album. Now we ready. Rolls Royce pull up, black boy hop out. Shout out to my mother and my father, didn't pull out. MSG sell out, fuck these niggas yap out. Whips on whips, my ancestors got their backs out. 2-4, 500 stacks for the hood. Call me Lumberjack, cause I wish a nigga would. Whereas you and like I, this the wish a nigga could face. They ain't getting paper like they should. Niggas ain't really young.
Yeah, I feel like he's become like one of my favorite kind of all round artist, just in the sense of how he plays the kind of the visuals, and like he's so creative with all elements of what it is to be an artist now, which is like,
do you reckon, because he is really good at it, do you think somebody is helping him? Do you reckon he's got, because every single interview I see of his, every single stunt I see of his, every single video, to me it just feels note perfect.
Yeah.
And I just sort of think, if that is all coming from him, it's pretty incredible, man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, even to the point where, like, each album has a kind of, or it feels like each album has a fashion sort of look that kind of goes along with it. Like this album, like, he's wearing these outfits with a similar hat, like a similar kind of neckerchief type thing.
Yeah.
He's got a kind of Gucci swag, like, but kind of the, like, preppy kind of neat, like, look. And it's like the album before, he was doing like the sort of suits with the weird hair and shit, the wig and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I guess he must have like a team of, he must have a stylist. He must have someone who is like, he's obviously on his videos. He's obviously working with loads of great directors and people, but fuck knows, man. It's like, just to have that level of, like you say, like everything to be that perfect.
Yeah.
Like, that is definitely driven by him. Like, he's definitely working hard at making that, like, all feel like it all fits together.
I don't know if you, like, you know, like, because he's sort of, with the wig and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know if you saw Kid Cudi, like, went on, I think, Kimmel or something, wearing a dress. Kurt Cobain dress or whatever. What's really funny about all that is, like, I remember when I was, like, reading The Source in, like, the fucking 90s or whatever, they're all going on about this rumour that there's a gay rapper, right? There's a gay rapper and he's too sort of come out or whatever. And then obviously now with like, you know, we've like all of those lines. I'm not saying Kid Cudi and Tyler the Creator playing with sexual, but just like the whole idea of somebody like Tyler the Creator coming out with a wig, Kid Cudi wearing a dress.
Mm.
In years gone by, that would have been like almost career ending for rappers. Do you know what I mean? Like to do something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm surprised that Kanye hasn't done it yet. Like that.
Yeah.
That move. Like it's because I feel like a lot of them. I feel like definitely with Tyler, he does that shit deliberately to like mock homophobes, basically.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I love that. I think that's sick. Like to. And Kid Cudi as well, actually. Yeah, he definitely knew that he was going to piss like middle America off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's I love that personally.
Yeah. But it's like Lil Nas X now, who my kids are obsessed with. It's just like every video, it's literally like, I want to fucking irritate homophobes as much as I possibly can. I mean, like, it is good. But almost the funniest element of that is I follow loads of old school rappers or like, you know, 90s rappers on Instagram. Yeah. And they are absolutely furious about what's going on. Like, so that ex from Brand Nubian, I think he might have posted up a picture of Kid Cudi on that thing, just going, what the hell has happened to hip hop? Or,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if this is what you want to fuck with, fine, but just know this, you ain't fucking with me no more or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Jesus. Just like really like,
yeah.
But there is this thing of like, I suddenly go, all right, that's why there was a rumor about a gay rapper for so long that didn't want to come out. Because with all of this purist hip hop, like all of these like, you know, 90s golden era guys, a lot of them really just don't want to see hip hop not be really macho and sort of grabbing your dick and stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's like the sort of gang shit. Like, I feel like that kind of, That sort of gang stuff has become like, people are becoming a bit more aware of the fact that it's like, especially rappers, I feel like are speaking out about the fact that it's stupid, basically. Like you've got people like Kendrick that are like a bit more kind of saying that that's not the way to go and kind of in contrast to like, say like fucking Tupac and Biggie shit, where it's just all about like making sure that everyone knew you were affiliated with gang culture and fucking all of that stuff. I feel like watching like documentaries about Tupac recently and Biggie as well, it's like a lot of that was almost like a pressure to show that you were from the streets and that you were kind of part of that culture and that you had the same mentality as those people or whatever in order for your culture to accept you.
Yeah.
And like, and now the sort of, I guess we're in such a different like culture where people are able to express themselves much more openly and actually, the more you express yourself, the more people gravitate towards you now. And the more real you are in terms of like being different, the better it is. So it's kind of gone completely the other way, which is like,
I know. Well, it's like all of those rappers talking about keeping it real. But the point that you've made there is that it isn't really. You're sort of trying to keep it to a very sort of whatever the accepted image of what a rapper should be, basically. So that authenticity, it's like fake. Whereas now, you could argue that people are keeping it real more than ever because, you know, you've got this sort of, all these different images, all these different kind of ways of presenting themselves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's just very funny seeing seeing rappers get pissed off about that. I just find it really hilarious. But also, I find it slightly upsetting because I feel like I've been guilty in the past of being, not in terms of like rappers wearing dresses, but in terms of like, I'm a purist when it comes to hip hop.
And then
I suddenly start thinking, oh, being a purist means I'm aligning myself with like those kind of views. I think I'm just going to fuck that off though, maybe. Do you know what I mean?
I think my way into like, when I sort of started getting into hip hop properly was like in sort of secondary school and when I got, me and Hugo both were kind of obsessed and like a few of my friends who were kind of the people that were showing me music and stuff. And we were all obsessed with like the Neptunes and Timbaland and these people that were making like beats that weren't, like they weren't the sort of classic hip hop beats really. They were pushing towards like weirder stuff and like slightly more experimental sounds or even like with NERD when that came out, I remember being like, oh shit, like this is, it's like a band. Like it was like a weird sort of crossover. And then that, I felt like opened a lot of doors into like other types of music. Yeah, so I guess my thing of hip, I was never really a purist in that sense. I was always kind of listening to the stuff that was going off in different, like, more odd directions, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Do you listen to instrumental stuff then?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, like, when I used to have decks and, like, buy vinyls, and I would get all of the, like, Neptunes and Timbaland vinyls as they were coming out, basically, and sort of spend all my money on it. And I'd just be mixing, like, instrumentals, basically. Just, like, no one rapping, just for me, basically. Yeah. But those were the beats that, like, I guess maybe that was why I was drawn towards the more sort of interesting beats, was because I was mixing them as well. So it was like, if it's just like a boom bap sort of beat that just repeats, it's not as good to, like,
yeah,
on its own sort of thing.
I remember being really upset because I was at some house party when I was a kid and I just bought this Das Effects album.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, can I put my album on? And they were like, yeah. And then I played some track and the beat started. And then as soon as they started rapping, one of my mates went, this track was so good until this fucking chatting started happening over the top of it. And that, like, I mean, Das Effects were like particularly mad rapping style. But like, do you ever find yourself listening to tracks and going, it's actually quite a bit of a shame that there is a rapper on this, basically?
Yeah, yeah, all the time. Like,
yeah.
Especially, I remember listening to this podcast when you were chatting to Hugo.
Yeah.
And you were talking about Timbaland and Magoo.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's
like a perfect example.
That's such, like, yeah.
And like, they're both just awful rappers. Like, but he's like, it's fucking some of Timbaland's like best beats, like on those Tim albums. Yeah, no one ever wants to listen to them because they're so painfully like bad with the rap.
Yeah, I think I've bought all of Timbaland's albums, right? And
yeah.
They combine incredible sonics with some of the worst lyrical play you've ever heard in your life. And you still listen to it. And sometimes the beat is so good, I start to try and convince myself actually what he's doing is amazing because he's written to this beat. And then actually, yeah. you actually listen to the lyrics on its own. You go, no, he's rhymed the same. He's rhymed the same word with itself, like about three or four times across this verse. Nothing about what he's saying makes sense.
Do you remember Bubba Sparks?
Oh yeah, I remember Bubba Sparks.
That's another great example of like just getting the instrumental album of Bubba Sparks was so great, so much better.
Yeah, I remember. I think I once told somebody that I thought Bubba Sparks was going to be bigger than Eminem. I think I must have been like high or something. I don't know what was up with me. So, is there anything about hip hop you don't like?
Bubba Sparks,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I guess probably that thing of like the old school sort of, like what you were talking about, that sort of snobbery of like, it needs to stay like, like how it used to be, and that there's a kind of, that hip hop evolving is problematic in certain ways. But that's the same with, I guess that's the same with any sort of music or art in general. There's always going to be the people that were doing it like back in the day that sort of think that they have a kind of ownership over it, and that it's like they understand it, and that people that are doing it differently are doing it wrong, essentially.
Yeah, but I wonder, I don't know, it's difficult to properly like ascertain this or whatever, because I listen to hip-hop, we listen to hip-hop, but I do sometimes feel like old school artists have had to deal with the genre changing much more than people in other genres have had to. Do you know what I mean? Like, you sort of look at rock artists or whatever. They can sort of reggae. There's probably slight changes with like lyrical concerns and stuff like that. That all the songwriting qualities or whatever. But essentially, it is the same music. Whereas, like, you know, I couldn't even begin to tell you what like a 90s, what Sadat X, for example, just because we were talking about him earlier. What he would fucking make of a Kid Cudi album, like, or do you know what I mean, or a Lil Nas X, or even a Drake record with singing on it, or just everything about it, like, they just must be thinking this isn't even the fucking same area of music anymore.
But maybe it isn't. I guess, like, maybe it's all right to just sort of like separate off the sort of purest, I don't know, hip hop, and then Kid Cudi. Because Kid Cudi, for me, sort of sits in, like, I don't know what you'd call it, but it does feel like it's a step out of, like, any sort of genre. Really. It's like a genre bending, I guess you call it.
Absolutely, yeah. Bends the edges of the genre till they're almost cracking.
All the homophobes are like raging at the idea of bending and...
Yeah. Oh, not more bending. Jesus. No, I know what you mean, yeah. But I think that there's certain rappers that do service that. You know, you listen to like a J. Cole, a Dave East, Kendrick, you know, all of those guys, you know, nobody's got a problem with them. Do you know what I mean? They sort of see them as... Although I heard I saw this video. I can't remember who it was talking. I don't know how much you listen to J. Cole or if you've ever listened to J. Cole, but...
I love J. Cole, yeah.
Right, but he said, I think J. Cole is brilliant. I think he's excellent at rapping, but I don't ever want to listen to any of his music. I'd ever thought of it, but I do think that there are people like that that go, yeah, he's really good. He's really good, but I just don't feel it like that. Do you know what I mean?
Why though? There's no explanation.
I think he was just...
Just the look of him.
Like, yeah, maybe. The dreads have finally got too long for him to sort of accept. But the reason I mention it is like, it's a few people have said that to me.
That might just be the thing of like, when somebody gets too big though. Feel like.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like a lot of people turn on artists when they get to a certain level where it's like, if you were, I don't know, even like someone like Kendrick, I feel like he's so kind of particular about what he's putting out, and he's managed to kind of cultivate a sound that feels very like deep and well thought out and complex and like amazing. But there's still people that are just like, oh, fuck him, he's overrated.
Just
because he's like so big and he's playing big.
But then we all have that a bit, don't we? Like, it took me ages to watch Game of Thrones because everybody's raving about it.
I still haven't watched it. Yeah.
Me neither, there you go. See what I mean?
Yeah. Should we?
Yeah, mate, you absolutely should. But even like, to be honest with you, like genuinely, people just do nothing. When that first came out, people raving about it so much. I thought, I can't fucking watch this show, man. Like, are you serious? Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't, like... But it's just, you just get like that, don't you? Where, like, something's talked about so much. So the contrarian in you goes, well, actually, not quite as good as everybody seems to think it is. I saw it, or whatever. Like, it's just...
Are you watching it wanting to hate it a little bit?
Yeah,
listening to Kendrick going, oh, no... He said that bit.
Trying to find faults. Yeah.
He's putting on a stupid voice. I don't like that one.
Have you been to many live shows?
Not recently, but yeah, back in the day, I used to go to a lot. One of my favourite live shows was, I went to a few, but like The Roots, I went to see live a few times. And NERD as well. Those were the two bands, I guess, that I went to see like a number of times because it was always fucking amazing. And The Roots, I don't know if you've seen The Roots like on stage, but the way they've just got all the like instruments and all of, they've got like a guy marching about the fucking huge tuba. I've never even seen one of those, I don't think. Like, and it's just such a vibe and like so much fun, man.
The thing about The Roots is like, I've seen them so many times. I mean, every single time you come away from it going, but that's the best they've ever been. Every single subsequent time. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Steve, did you say you caught Questlove's drumstick at a show?
Yeah. So there was a show where I was near the front and basically at the end he like signed his drumstick and just dashed it out into the crowd and I was like fucking jumped up. My long arm, like douse him, just like reached up and caught it. Yeah, I still got that.
Was there a fight for it?
A little bit. I had to sort of grab it and then go down like and sort of hold on to it for a bit just to like
scream. You know what I mean?
Just to sort of show that this is definitely mine. No one else is having this. Yeah, it was a proud moment for me. One of the times when being tall was really worked for me.
So did you say you went to see NERD? Did you?
Yeah, I went. So that's another story actually about me getting like a thing in the crowd. So I also at NERD got a backstage pass. Like they just started giving them out to people in the sort of front, and I was I was right near the front, and I basically managed to get like a little backstage pass thing. And it was really weird because it's like, you know, when you sort of you're in the middle of like fucking, it was basically like a mosh pit a lot of the time. It was like proper rowdy, like people going mental to like Rockstar and Lap Dance and those kind of tunes where it's like everyone's going nuts and we're all sweating and fucking, then suddenly like it was the end of the show and I'm with my mates as well and none of them have a backstage pass, so it's just me. And I'm like, all right,
see you in a bit.
So I'm gonna I don't know what I'm gonna do with this. I don't even know how it works. Like, what do you do with this like backstage pass? So I sort of like said bye to everyone and then like tried.
Did they know that you had a backstage? You didn't try start out and go, all right, I'm gonna head off to the tube guys. Or, like,
yeah. No, they knew. They were like, fucking, oh, this is mad. They were all excited for me, which made me even more sort of nervous. And like I basically was like suddenly like kind of sobering up almost, like like all wet with sweat and just fucking like, and I was such a fanboy as well. I had like the NERD hat, you know, like the mesh hat, which I still have, to be fair. So I'm like, I shouldn't even laugh at myself. But I also had like a Rolling Stones t-shirt on because I think it's because I had
a Pharrell case.
Yeah, and because Pharrell wore one like at one point and I was like, you know, wanted to sort of show my allegiance to his influences and just show that I was a complete fanboy, I guess. So I ended up backstage, like, and eventually, like, I think it was in Shepherd's Bush, and I sort of showed this pass, and the security let me through into this little, like, and you know how the backstage of these places is, like, it's like a little, like, there's like a little tiny bar, there's like a few A&R type people knocking about, and then it's just me just standing there, like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And I basically just like just waited for a bit, just sort of standing there. And then like gradually people started appearing, like the artists. So like Lee Harvey, underrated rapper.
Yeah.
Do you know what's mad? I chatted to him, right? This is the first person I talked to. And I was like, have you got any like songs coming out? And he had a whole album that he made with Pharrell, like with the Neptunes.
Wow.
A whole Lee Harvey album, and it never came out, never saw the light of day. But that somewhere, there's just like all these.
Because his verse on that tune is great, right? I mean, it's like,
not really.
Come on, man.
He goes. When you think of Harvey, you think of a Harley.
Yeah, I like that one.
But he was a G. He was nice to me and shit. I had a little chat with him, and so that loosened me up a little bit. Then Khalees came in. And I was like fucking like buzzing over Khalees. Like I fucking love Khalees on so many levels. She's just a fucking a G. So I'm getting them all to sign my hat and shit. And it's
what
all
did
this,
they? Like, did you get any reaction to you having the hat and the Rolling Stones t-shirt?
Was it? Khalees said I like your t-shirt, and I was like,
wow,
fucking yes. And then Pharrell appeared, and in my memory, he just sort of magically appeared like by the bar. He didn't come in the door like everybody else. He was just there suddenly, and I was like, "Fuck, it's Pharrell." And I did that thing that now I'm really aware of because I like get it from the other side. So like I did that thing, you know, when somebody like knows who you are and they just sort of stare at you and kind of approach you, but they don't say anything.
Right.
And they're just sort of creepily like standing near you, closer to you. And I didn't sort of realize at the time how weird that was, but yeah, I basically did that. I did that until Pharrell like looked at me and was like, "You're right," and basically gestured for me to like come and chat to him.
How long do you think he was aware of your approach before he decided to sort of engage with you?
It felt like a long time, but it was probably not that long. It was probably like 10 seconds of me like kind of looking at him. Like, I probably caught his eye like twice, and then he just was like, he was on his own as well, which was like made it a bit easier. So he just sort of said, like sort of gestured to come over, and then I was like, because I was a music geek and I was the biggest Neptunes fan, like, ever. To the point where we had, like, Neptunes Chronicles. Like, we had CDs of, like, where we just put together all of the Neptunes, all of the unreleased stuff. Like, we had these, like, we made our own, like, albums and shit. So I was basically just straight in with just like,
you want to tell him everything,
doing
right?
Next, yeah, I was like, what are you doing next? Like, I love this. I've got all of these things. I've got like
the t-shirt as well, of course.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know if you noticed. Yeah. And I basically just completely fanboyed, like to like unapologetically just showed him that I was just like the biggest fan. And he, to be fair, he was amazingly polite, very cool, obviously, like just kind of nodded along and just like shook my hand, signed my hat and shit. And then he was gone. And it was like, I was fucking buzzing. As soon as that happened, I left because I was just like, that's the peak.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to like tell everyone and shit. And just, I was just like, I remember coming out of there on my own, like just fucking with all this adrenaline and all this like excitement and just thinking, I've got no one to like share this with. It was so weird. It was such a strange.
Start a fight. Try and start a fight or something. Yeah, right? To get it out of your system.
Thanks,
you know what? Like, it's funny though, because you must have it with like people just do nothing fans. Because you have got,
yeah.
I know obviously the show's massive and all of that, but it's massive, but at the same time has quite a fucking dedicated kind of almost cult-like following. Do you know what I mean? So you must have a lot of people come up to you and go, do you know like when your buddy's like talking about refitting the room and then like you're sort of in the back and you do this look across to the others.
It's like, you don't even know about
it. It's like fucking mad because like none of my friends clocked it. And I went, did you see the way that Steve's just looked across there? Like that. You must get a lot of that, right?
The sort of minutiae. Do you know what it is? Normally it's like the, because we obviously did like the YouTube like stuff ages before the TV show. So like everyone's sort of go-to thing is like, mate, I used to watch the YouTube stuff. Like just that's how you know. It's
the
like,
purists,
it's all, yeah,
purists,
that's like yeah. Eminem Infinite. Like I've been following you like,
yeah.
Since back in the day, man. But yeah, it is mad when you get those kind of, when you see people that are the equivalent of me with Pharrell that just sort of completely go weird.
Mm.
And like, and it's happened to me a few times where people just turn into like, I don't know, just like, it's, you can tell it's not what they're normally like.
They're
losing their shit basically and just going sort of, I don't know, the excitement sort of takes over and then, and you sort of have to like, your job in that situation is to sort of deal with that and to sort of like not be a dick and not sort of like ruin their vibe or whatever, but also like if they're trying to like hang off you or like sort of be like inches away from your face, like telling you everything that they like in your ear or whatever, it's sometimes it's quite difficult, man. It's mad. At festivals, it's a lot. People trying to sort of give you drugs and like...
Yeah, yeah.
And they're already off their nuts.
No way.
People off their tits and then they see you. And then I don't even imagine what that downloads like into your ear. Like,
it's emotional.
Yeah.
Like a spiritual journey.
But I always have that because whenever I've met rappers and like even like we've met people on this podcast, I've made like a real dick of myself. Like Rupert and I, after we interviewed... we had to like apologize podcast for how we were.
I understand that.
But like whenever people are like that to me, I always want to say to them, I know you're not normally like this and I know you're just excited and it's absolutely fine. I'm not going to, do you know what I mean? I don't think you're a dick. I don't think you're, because a lot of the time I've had things where most of the conversations, people apologizing for how they're talking to me. So, they go, I really like this. I'm really sorry. I'm just really sorry. God, why am I being so weird to you? Like that. And that is most of the conversation. You sort of go, feel like saying, no, you don't have to apologize.
Yeah.
Just say that, because otherwise what's going to happen is we're going to go our separate ways. I mean, your story is going to be how you told me you were sorry like 75 times in this conversation.
I like to reassure them by saying weird shit. I'll say like, let's get weird. Like, let's take our tops off. Like, if they want a photo, I'll be like, you know what I mean? Like, are we doing top trousers down or are we just normal?
Like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Yeah, because then if you're weirder than them, then it makes them feel more comfortable, I guess.
Yeah.
That's a good way of doing it.
The worst one I've had is where I've tried to crack a joke and it's died on its ass.
You just seen them.
It's so funny. You go, yeah, a bit like your jumper, your knob. Huh?
And then they just like instantly aren't a fan anymore.
Yeah, just basically all of the work that you've done has been undone by this one 30-second direct interaction.
And they just sort of switch off, like you know, on GTA when the police suddenly stop following you and they just turn around and like they're really close to you, but suddenly they just lose all interest and walk away. Basically that.
Steve, that is our time, man. We've actually gone over because we've talked longer than an hour. I mean, that's how. So thank you very much for that.
I'll send the invoice.
Please do, mate, for that 8 minutes. So when is the film coming out?
The film is coming out on the 18th of August in all the good cinemas.
Is it like a big? Is there a big premiere?
No, there's not really because of COVID and that, like, I don't know, they're being a bit weird about it.
You don't have to say that just because I'm angling to come.
There's going
to
be screenings, but not...
Right.
You're not allowed to say premiere because then that means you have to have all these permissions and, like, the police have to be notified and all this sort of shit.
But
there will be screenings, which you'll be hearing about.
So if you get invited to an initial screening, basically, that is... That's basically a prohibition.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be underground on a projector with like a little Bose speaker at the front.
Well, look, man, we can't wait for it all to come. I just think it's amazing, man, that you've... Like, look, I don't want to... I'm about to be like you with...
Yeah, Corona, do the fanboy thing. Like,
get a bit closer.
Yeah, but genuinely. The other thing is they're doing a documentary about what you guys have done, right? Like, in terms
BBC.
You from inception to, because it is just, I know that we're wrapping this up and now I'm about to ask something major, but I don't know how much you ever step aside from it and think you've gone from creating this little thing that was just so you guys and so much your idea, and it is an amazing thing to experience and gone through, right?
I guess what's extra sort of special and what I feel particularly lucky about is that it's kind of we've managed to keep the same team all the way through. Like, even with the film, it's like the same director, the same like DOP, the same makeup artist, like it's all the same people working on it, and it has become like a proper sort of like a family thing, you know what I mean? It's been a proper sort of special journey. But the documentary is mad because I guess, you don't really stop and kind of, because you're always just doing stuff. You're doing the next thing. Like, once you do one series, you do the next series and so on. And then we were doing a film, and it's like, this year's been the sort of first time we stopped and kind of been like reflective about it. And and we've got like Martin Freeman on the documentary talking about how much like he loves all the things about it and stuff, and that's fucking surreal. Like, that's so mad. There's a bit where he's like talking about Steve's, and he's like, if that guy hasn't done a lot of drugs in his life, then he's basically Robert De Niro. And I was like, that's what he says. And I was like, I haven't done many drugs.
That's incredible. So you are
I'm basically Robert De Niro.
Yeah,
there you go.
So there,
one for the poster.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm on the crowd.
That sort of shit just blows.
It's an interesting way of working, because what I do with my stuff is I tell people that I'm going to keep them on board for forever, and then I cut it off as soon as we can get
very consistent,
different team here. Like, yeah, do you know what I mean? It's like very, sort of very disloyal.
It's worked.
Yeah.
Just upgrade every year.
Constantly. But never tell anyone. This guy's see you on the next series.
And then be like, when they see you in the street or whatever, be like, oh, what? They didn't get it. I chased it loads.
God, I told them. So you're not doing it. Oh, my God.
Blame on the channel. Bloody Channel 4 again. You know what they're like.
Well, look, Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you, man.
Yeah, man, you too. Thanks so a lot for having me. It's an honour.
It is an honour for all of us to be talking together to each other, you know, with what's going on in the world. And it really does make you reflect, doesn't it? God, I'm so fucking hungover.
We've made it.
I think you should start drinking again. It's 12:30.
Do you think
now.
So?
Yeah, I think so. Mate, take the edge off.
Get a goblet out. Hair of the dog.
There you go.
All right, I'm on it, guys. I'm on it. If you're about to hear about some pretty mad stories about my parenting this afternoon. enjoy that. All right, Wiki. Cheers, mate. Thank you. Take care.
Nice one.